I'm Max. I'm an alcoholic. I've never been to a panel meeting and at a convention, so I'm not really sure. I really didn't want to go first. I can tell you that I've got a home group. I've got a sponsor who's got a sponsor, and I've got some sponsees. I really don't enjoy speaking. But, you know, I always heard I can't turn away the hand of AA. And when asked, I've got to show up as uncomfortable and fearful, and I got to get out the way. But resting on my laurels, it didn't make any sense to me in the beginning. It took hard-earned experience to value the topic, what the book references, or the seasons in my life that I've been through it. Because when I first got sober, I wanted the pain to quit, and my sponsor, when I asked this guy to sponsor me, he said, "Well, what are you willing to do?" And I had no idea what the answer was, as simple as it is, the answer being anything, right? And I was trying to look for this right answer, and he's just looking at me, and I'm terrified of giving him the wrong answer, and he's, what are you willing to do? And I said, "Well, anything you tell me." He said, "Okay, I can work with that." But it's amazing how an alcoholic like myself can stray away from willing to do anything, right? When the pain starts to subside, I'm working better, feeling better, looking better, as it describes in A Vision for You. And then I'm on the other side where I'm unwilling to call a sponsor. I won't go to a meeting. And I forget where I come from. And it just happens. And for me, it happens like snapping my finger. In my mind, but my behavior or talking to a sponsor would tell me, man, it happens over a matter of time. As I start going to less meetings, I start straying away. My own experience, man, I got sober. I would do anything. Life was really good. I got custody of a child, and I got a girlfriend, got engaged, I got married, ended up having a couple few kids. Living the dream. And as the time went on, I took for granted being sober. I took for granted this idea that it's a gift, and that there's something that I've got to put forward to maintain or to stay sober. And I found a second bottle sober. I can honestly tell you, I caused more harm in sobriety than I did when I was drinking. And there's probably even a couple people in this room tonight that could raise their hand and say, "Hey, that's," and fact check that. Kind of like we Google everything, right? I'm not trying to be arrogant or braggadocious, right? But this disease is that dangerous. What, the only deep disease known to man that tells you don't have the disease? Right? Is, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I can't remember the pain of a week or a month ago. Man, do I really need to go to a meeting tonight, Ben? Do I really need to be over there? Nah, man, I'm all right. Next thing you know, it's a couple few weeks, and I ain't talked to nobody, and I've seen people die like that, right? See people end up unemployed or end up homeless or end up, you know, their life in shambles, but, you know, worst case, I mean, I see people die, people not able to come back and get a white chip. And that's not my story. And I'm very fortunate. And I got to say this. Thank y'all for being here. It's an honor and a privilege. As much as I hate speaking, to have experienced that I've lived long enough, and somehow this God has kept me sober long enough to get to come up here and speak. You know, there's some faces in here. I remember stumbling into the rooms in the Alano Club here in Lexington, and trying to, you know, coming in with a 9-month-old baby and not really wanting to be a dad, but not sure how to do it either. Was terrified. And man, there's mothers in this room. They taught me how to be a father. You know what I mean? There's men in here that taught me how to do it. And I mean, I came in here to stop drinking, and my life was changed. And then after some period of time, it's like, oh, I don't really need that. I like working, right? I like money. I get sober, start feeling better. I'm working good. I see the man back there in the Atlanta hat nodding. He knows what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? start, you know, the book says we're of, 12 and 12 says we're of good earning capacity, right? And so we're working for a little while and we're sober, and then all my security is tied up in work rather than this power that this sponsor has taught me how to plug into. And so I'm working all, well, how you doing? I'm working all the time. Hi, I'm a carpenter named Max. You can tell where my security's tied up, right? It was all about my job. It was all about the pride and prestige that came from it. But at some point in time, this world will fail me. A job will fail me. A relationship will fail me, right? This, whatever I've got all my security plugged into, at some point in time, man, there's not going to be any power there. It's going to be dead. What am I going to do? And that was, again, that's a synopsis of my story. That's what I did. I went to work, and I was really, really good at it, and they loved me. But I didn't treat my alcoholism, and I put myself in a precarious situation that, you know, to be quite honest, hell, it could still play out. Like, there's still some, it can't all the way be made right. And so with untreated alcoholism, I've caused harm to myself and my family and people in this world that, man, I got to carry the burden. Like, there's no fixing it. I just can't wash my hands and go drop a fist step and, I'm cool. I did that. But then my sponsors taught me how to learn to look the world in the eye in spite of myself, that I am forgiven. But had I not done that, I ended up in a place where it's like, is it even worth living anymore? Do these three little girls still need me? Like, I don't have any purpose. I don't have anything to offer. And I'm sober the whole time. I didn't think about drinking. I just wanted to die. I was ashamed of who I was. Rested on my laurels. And somebody give me the definition coming over here, the Merriam-Webster definition. And these achievements, right? Resting on these achievements. And so when I start taking credit for what this power has done in my own life, man, I'm doomed. I'm destined to wrap around my own axle because I don't life right. And it's, I don't know. I guess you don't have to do that, but it seems like if somebody said in here when I was getting ready to come up here, probably everybody's done it, but you don't have to. Like, if I would have just kept calling my sponsor, if I would have been, I guess my issue is, I don't like to be transparent all the time, right? So I call my sponsor and I'm not telling the truth, right? Well, how can somebody hold me accountable if, you know what I'm saying, he's looking through a smoky window? Well, he can. It's key for me. What am I thinking about? What am I really doing? What goes on in the dark will come to light. Believe that. Well, I hate that saying. It's terrifying. But, man, it's real. It's, man, I'm telling you, I'm a sorted places, right? Sober, without a drink, and justify it. Well, because I'm not drinking. I'm all right. But, man, it's conscience. It starts to work on you. It starts to wear on me, and the guilt and shame, and you stray away, and I feel like I'm talking in circles, to be honest. But if I could say anything about resting on my laurels, it would be to stay plugged in. The book says half the zeal that we went after the drink. If we go after this sobriety thing, man, it works. And then how it works, rarely have we seen a person fail. And, man, that's the truth. This power has never failed me. Man, I've walked through all sorts of calamity in sobriety, medical with a child, to custody and getting married. And, man, I've went through some painful things, but they were really beautiful when put in perspective by Alcoholics Anonymous. When the work is done, I put it in the columns. When I get out the way, when I find my part, the freedom and the peace I've found through total calamity. And then when Max is unchecked, I take a perfectly serene picture, right? And I cause teetotal destruction. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But that's why I need y'all. That's why I have to keep doing this. Because again, because these achievements and these blessings that I get, a buddy of mine said it a long time ago at the Token Club in Lexington. He said, this life is so good, it's dangerous. And I firmly believe that when I came in here, I have nothing. I didn't have anything to talk about. I didn't have anything in the world. I didn't have any dreams. right? Like the dreams that I have now, I never imagined, right? I was an empty shell of a person. Say we're bankrupt, right? Spiritually, physically, the whole kit and caboodle, right? And then I come around here for a minute, and I get put back together. The men that once seemed doomed, men and women, rather, right? And then what am I going to do? Am I going to keep going? Am I going to keep plugging in? Am I going to keep being honest? Am I going to walk through the uncomfortable and come speak so I can hold my head up this afternoon? You know? I have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Because when I'm comfortable, I'm not being challenged. And when I'm not being challenged, I'm not growing. Whether it be my character, whether it be my, you know, as it, you know, spiritually closer to this power. I mean, man, the most painful events, I'm either going to drink, I'm going to take my own life, or I'm going to go to this God. Like, I got three options. I've come around long enough in the calamity that I've been through, the drink wasn't really an option. But I tell you what, I was quick to think about wrecking into the bridge pier on the way to work. I was quick to think about going home and, you know what I'm saying, just being all alone and broken. And you hear stories about it. People got 20 years, 25, you know what I'm saying, and they take their own life. And I feel like that for me is I was spared, because that was what the only thing I had that was left to do. I'll tell this story and I'll hush. My wife and I had bought some property, and man, things were looking really, I mean, just looking teetotally marvelous in our life. And then Max showed up, and I made a teetotal mess. And I was driving out to that property, and I had my three daughters with me. And I had this vision of them running back up the road. Because the only thing I thought I had left to do was take my own life. And like, I could see it. I can't describe it to you, but I could see where I was going and what I was going to do. And I mean, I reached out to this cat who I'd gotten in touch with spiritually. And I said, man, it's not good. He could hear it. And he said, Max, just promise me you're going to meet me at 6 o'clock at Waffle House. And I didn't want to, because I knew if I went, I had to be honest, right? This is a result of my own behavior. This is what I do without the program. And I'm like, I'll be there. And so we went down to that property, and I cut three or four flowers and put them in a water bottle with my middle daughter. We're going to take them home and let her give them to her mama. And I can't describe to you the pain that I felt driving down there. If you've been there, you know. If you've been there, you know that feeling. But for that guy answering the phone and me being willing to go sit at a Waffle House, which is what members of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me, you go sit at a Waffle House, Common Grounds, a coffee shop, right? You go sit somewhere and you look at the book and you laugh and cry and joke and you get whole. It's when I don't do those things is when this pain appears in my life. When I do things that, man, I just... Whew. But we don't have to. And the book says certain low spots lie ahead. So chances are, you're, if you haven't been through what I'm talking about, if you think I'm crazy and talking out the side of my mouth, you may still be on the pink cloud and enjoy it. I'm happy for you. But it's coming. But it's going to happen. But you don't have to do the unthinkable, or for us, the thinkable, right? You don't have to. Call your sponsor, call a friend. I don't give a damn who you call. And just call somebody you can be honest with. But I genuinely believe that old man answering and me going to that Waffle House that evening, it spared me. It spared me in that little moment and gave me a little bit of hope to realize I'm not alone. I appreciate y'all for being here, and thank you for letting me say my piece.
I'm Brooke and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for your message, and thank you for Taylor and Ben for having me. So I'm really grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is February 6th of 2013, so I just celebrated 11 years. And, sometimes I have to pinch myself. Like, I reflect back on, you know, the person that I was when I first came in here to, you know, like, the transformation of the woman that y'all see today, and it's completely different. And I'm just so, so grateful for the gift of desperation, you know, because that's really all that it was this time around whenever I got sober, is I was finally desperate enough to be willing and open-minded enough to do something different. And for a long time, I wasn't. I did the 1-2-3 shuffle, and I would get to the 4-step, and I would go back out. I was in and out of treatment centers. I did the Women's Healing Place. I was at different halfway houses. I was an Our Lady of Peace. I was strapped to a bed from an overdose and attempted suicides into Central State Hospital. From Central State Hospital, I stayed a little bit and then went back to AA. And every single time, they kept telling me that only one person out here is going to stay sober. And every single time, I said, that's going to be me. You know, because I meant it with everything in me that I was tired of going through the pain that I was going through. But I just didn't know how to stop. I thought, you know, on my own willpower, like, I can stop. You know, I'm strong enough. And that just wasn't the case. Every single time, I thought I could just take a drink or, you know, smoke some weed. And really what the problem is, I hadn't put in the action. I hadn't worked the 12 steps, and I haven't had a spiritual awakening because of the steps. And so dogs bark, alcoholics drink, and that's just what I continue to do. And, so before this time, before I came in, I had no conception of God. I did not grow up in church. My mom was a drug addict and lost custody of me whenever I was younger. My dad, he lost custody when I was 4. I was in state custody. My sister took custody of me. So from the age of 12 and on, I was out on my own, you know, and so there was no God. And if you had the life that I had, you'd probably drink too, you know, and that's just the way that I did. I played the victim for a really long time. And my life, I was in collision with everybody, every place, everything, all the time. I was full of fear. I didn't know it at the time until I got into inventory. I ruined all my relationships. I burned all my bridges. I would come up with lies for no reason, like say I didn't want to show up to work. I would tell them that two of my aunts got in a car wreck and died. I can't make it to work. And like that's how I would quit my job. Like they really care that I quit my job, you know, if I wasn't already fired. But just constantly lying, you know. I had no morals. I had no values. And that's just the way it was. And then I finally got that gift of desperation. And says, either I'm going to die an alcoholic death, or I'm going to do what these people said to do, and that's get on my knees and pray. And so I went into JDAC, and I finally said that first honest prayer, God help me. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. I can barely open a door. I'm so weak and sick right now, but please help me. And from there, things started to go and play, and I ended up getting to a house or a halfway house called St. Jude, and I lived there for my first 15 months of my sobriety, and I kept putting one foot in front of the other. And they tell you in Alcoholics Anonymous, in this big book, actually, you know, but a drink is but a symptom. You know, the problem centers in my mind. I have a disease of alcoholism. And so I did not go into that halfway house perfect. I got into every consequence. I couldn't decide the guy at the VOA halfway house and the guy that was tattooed on me in prison. I couldn't figure out which one was going to be best for my life. I just thought I was a real gangster. I had guns tattooed on my back. I had MOE, money over everything, tattooed on my leg with money bags falling down it. The guy in prison that I was going to be ride or die for life was tattooed on my chest right over my heart. And, I had F it tattooed in my lip. And now I barely even say those words. Like, I never, ever, almost ever, never say cuss words anymore, which is so wild. Like, my husband, he laughs all the time. He's not one of us. And so when he hears my stories, he's like, what in the world? It's pretty wild. I started to get in the steps, and even though I made every single mistake, the one thing that I did is I remained willing. And I remember I just thought the director of that program just had it out for me, because I, you know, there was one point we were at a meeting at the Ice House, and during the readings, I got in a fist fight. 4 months sober at the Ice House, they called the police, and me and the girl that got in a fight that lived in the same halfway house together took off running back to the halfway house like we're running from the police. I mean, just crazy. But all of those were blessings in disguise because I got banned from the halfway house, so that made me like branch out to other meetings that I wouldn't normally, you know, go to. Yeah, so I had every consequence. I've had my phone taken, no male contact. Weekends, I had big plans and designs, and they told me I wasn't going anywhere because of consequences. You know, because I just didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to act. I didn't know how to lean on a higher power. I didn't know how to do the next right thing. So I really encourage anybody that doesn't have a sponsor, you know, to get a sponsor and to get in the steps and to practice the A triangle. You know, you can do 90 meetings in 90 days, but there's nowhere in this big book that says do 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, it's a triangle. There's unity, service, and recovery, you know, and so I need to be practicing all three of them things. If not, I'm wobbling, you know. I need to be working the steps. I need to be involved in service, whether that's, you know, working with the sponsee, picking her up, taking her somewhere. Like, there's so many ways to get involved in service, even if you haven't even worked the whole 12 steps. And so I advise, you know, to get that guidance and get that ball rolling. So, yeah, so resting on my laurels, working up to it. So, I worked the first step. I admitted, obviously, I had a problem. And then I did step two, you know, that honest prayer. You know, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. And in step three, and I did a step four inventory, you know, and I found out a lot of truths about myself that I didn't really want to look at, but it pointed out a lot. And a lot of people on that list, pretty much every single one of them went on to my, you know, after I did six and seven, to my eighth list. And then there's step nine, where I make my amends. And then there's step 10, which whenever they asked me to speak on resting on the laurels, I found that in the big book, and every week at my home group, actually, we read the 10 step promises, which is right in the book where it talks about resting on our laurels. And I just absolutely love these promises, but these promises take action. This isn't something that just happens, you know, whenever we get sober. We have to take the action, and that's what, you know, this whole program is about, is taking action and tapping into a power greater than ourselves. And that's how we stay sober. And right here it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or in anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep and fit spiritual condition. And I just absolutely love those promises. It says I'm not fighting anymore. You know, it just comes. But I also have to remember that I have to keep tapping into that power. Like, I still have a disease. I'm never cured of this disease. And right after it says, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of our alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thou will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go into us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line with it is the proper use of will. So I love that. So it's finally telling me that, like, I have the will. I can exercise this will. Like, my will has gotten me nowhere, but I can exercise this will of building a relationship with God, to rely on God, to ask Him to guide my days, you know. And I feel like step one all the way up to 10, you know, like I'm building this relationship with God. You know, He's helping me through this hard inventory. He's helping me get through these hard consequences whenever I want to run, you know, where I'm just staying. He's helping me through these amends that I'm scared to face, you know, all these things. Like I'm working up to this relationship, and step 10 is when it's like the crux of it. It's like when I really start to exercise my relationship with my higher power and spot check every single day, you know, who have I harmed? You know, what have I done wrong? Do I need to make amends? Have I been fearful today? You know, what am I so afraid of? Because, you know, just because we get sober doesn't mean life doesn't happen. Life shows up, you know, and it's been a big roller coaster. And like he was saying, like, it's actually been harder for me. So my whole sobriety has been a little bit of a struggle. You know, I came in here, like, I didn't have a license. It took me 2 years to get a license. I was on check systems from bad, you know, doing bad checks. You know, so it was a lot of work, you know, so I always had something to do, always, you know, working towards something. I was young, so like my insurance was high, and I was, you know, working. I was trying to get back in school. I didn't even have a GED, so now I'm trying to get my GED, and now I'm trying to get in college. And, you know, I always had these challenges that kept me real busy in AA, you know. And then I was in a relationship for 5 years, and he had 4 years sober and decided to start taking pain pills. And not even 9 months later, I found my fiance dead. And you know, whenever I went home after that funeral, and actually I was celebrating. I think I was celebrating 6 years, like the next day. So I'm like planning a funeral. But alcoholics taught me to still show up, you know, and I still showed up for my celebration after planning a funeral, being up for 3 days straight, and Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me. I mean, there were so many people in that room, and I didn't even know what I was saying, where I'm at, and still, like, looking back on it, I still don't even know. But you know what? God is just rearranging those pieces, and I don't even know it. And because I have stuck and stayed and put in the actions and listen to my sponsor, and when I quit my job, I go back and immediately make amends, you know, like I have learned to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and walking through those hard times, you know, I always, you know, have put in action, and I can honestly say that I've never been more than 3 weeks without a meeting since I've been sober. And it has not been perfect. I still suffer from depression, sleep. You know, there's things that has cropped up in sobriety, but I wouldn't change my worst day drunk for my best day drunk, sorry. I wouldn't change my best day drunk for my worst day sober. I really wouldn't. And now I'm married. And he lost his wife to cancer 4 months before I lost my fiance, and we met only by God. And now I have 2 kids. She had 2 babies, and so I've been in their life since they were 1 and 2, and they're going on 6 and 7 now. And now I'm pregnant with my first baby right now. I'm 4 months pregnant. But I tell you, it gets a lot harder, like he was saying, when things are going good in life than when things were really bad. Because whenever things were really bad, I knew what y'all had told me, because alcohol beat me in that state of reasonableness. Alcohol, I'm scared to death to go back to that hard work. That was way harder work than getting up here and showing up for people and doing what I'm supposed to do and saying yes to speaking even when I don't want to, and it makes me a nervous wreck. And, you know, doing the things that we are supposed to do, going back out is much harder. And it is very, very, very painful. And I wanted to take my own life, and I didn't want to live. And I had no one around me, and I was so alone. And you know what? The day that I got sober, I wasn't getting pistol whipped in my head or going through all that hard stuff. It was that internal pain that we all can relate to. You know, it was just, I could not stand me anymore. And I don't ever want to go back to that. So it has been real easy for me to put in a lot of action when things are bad because it scares me. But when things are real good is whenever I have to really watch myself. That's when my depression and I don't need to go to a meeting last night, or I went last week so I can skip this week, and then I go next week and then I'll skip this week. You know, so like I have to really, you know, check my ego and check myself every single day. I don't know. I'm just really, really grateful for this program and, you know, just the thing that it taught me. Like, I don't have to run on that same fear anymore. Like, we have spiritual tools that we can pick up anytime. We have this amazing fellowship with all these people, you know, around us that can relate and care. Like, we don't have to go through those things alone anymore. And I'm just really grateful for this program, and that's all I have. Ever, she just said I could take as much time as I need. Never, 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 never tell an Italian alcoholic from Texas that I can have as much. So I guess there'll be catering dinner in here tonight. Y'all get comfortable. I'm kidding. My name's Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. And truly, by the grace of God, I've been sober since April the 6th of 1987. And I so enjoyed listening to Max and Brooke. Y'all just did such a tremendous job. And I identify with everything that I've heard. I've had such a great weekend with everybody here. I love this topic. And, you know, much like what Brooke was just sharing, and what Max said, right, it's when I'm in trouble or when things are hard, I come to you, right, mostly because I like you to feel sorry for me about how hard things are. I really get in trouble when I think I got it. Give me 3 or 4 days of consistent prayer and in an inspirational moment throughout the day, and I answer every call, write my sponsee's text and say, thank you so much, you helped me. It's the worst thing you can do for somebody like me. One of the people that I love and respect, and we've been talking about him this weekend, but one of the giants in Alcoholics Anonymous for me was a man named Don Pritz. And Don used to say the most dangerous place in Alcoholics Anonymous was the thank you line. Because I think that's my accomplishment. So I've got it wrong from the get-go, right? I was very fortunate that in 1998, I moved back to Austin, and I was sitting in these meetings, and some of you will know what I'm talking about, but it was the days of the daily affirmations, and there were people in there talking about their teddy bears, and they had post-it notes on their mirrors that said, I love myself, you know, and I landed back in those meetings and thought, I'm going to die here. I don't know what we're talking about, but it ain't Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was talking in those meetings to correct the bad data that was being shared. You can imagine how awesome it was to listen to me talk in a meeting. And they were just wrong. And the prayer, St. Francis' prayer says, where there's error, let me bring truth. So clearly. And so I'm in this meeting and I'm, you know, enlightening everyone with all of my knowledge about Alcoholics Anonymous. And this old man came up to me and said, had a Marine ball cap on, and he kind of walked with a swagger, and pardon my language, but this is what happened. He walked up to me and he said, little girl, do you have any idea how full of shit you are? Before I could help myself, I said, will you sponsor me? And he said, somebody should, and walked off. And I thought, I don't know if I have a sponsor or not, but I went back to the meeting the next day just in case. And he sponsored me for the next 22 years until the day he died. He was my sponsor, and I trusted him with my life. And I did a lot of work in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't want Pops to be mad at me. Not because I was seeking God, and not because I wanted to be useful, or because I just didn't want Pops to be mad at me. The wonderful thing about that relationship is that he never gave me any information except what was in the book. He never gave me an opinion. I was clear when I was out of line. I didn't need to ask for his opinion. But he never said, I think you should. He never said,
right? If you really wanted to be blah, blah, blah. He would say, well, what does the book say? And what would happen is I started following the directions that are outlined in the book, and I've got this good sponsorship, and I'm in this home group, and I'm active, and, you know, my alcoholism doesn't show up and say, you know what we ought to do? We ought to drink 2 fifths of tequila, rob a bank, and see if we can beat the cops to the border. Because if it did, I would call you, right? And I would say, I'm not okay today, right? You're not going to believe what's going on in my head. But my alcoholism, and at the time, I had a house full of teenagers. I had a drunk husband. I had sponsees and sponsor and all this stuff, and I was working. And I mean, it's very busy, very, very busy. My alcoholism shows up and says, can you believe they didn't say thank you? My alcoholism shows up and says, you already know what they're going to say at the meeting tonight. You've heard them say it, right? Because we all have that old timer that tells the same stinking story every week, right? My alcoholism loves that guy. My disease will convince me that I don't need to hear that story today. That I could sit out in the, my home group at that time, we kind of had like a room outside of the meeting room where you could go get coffee and then you would go in to where the meeting was. And my alcoholism will tell me it's okay for me to sit out there and drink coffee today. Right? Somebody might come in. There might be a newcomer that needs for me to be sitting out there drinking coffee. What I have learned is, one, I don't have any laurels in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't. What I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous was 37 cents, a pair of flip-flops, cutoffs, a hoodie, a bad attitude, and a clothes mind. Every single thing else that I have is Alcoholics Anonymous. Belongs to y'all. So the idea that I could be resting on an accomplishment is a delusion to begin with. I am not immune to that delusion, but I am aware today that it's a delusion. I always co-sign my ideas, right? Have you ever noticed? Like, if I just come up with a great plan and keep it to myself, it's always a great plan. If you've done something that my disease has decided was an excuse for me not to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, I agree with myself 1,000% of the time, right? And so it's what Max and Brooke both said, which is, it is so incredibly necessary for me to be transparent, right? And I'm as transparent with my sponsees as I am with my sponsor. My pop sponsored me until the day that he died, and I lost him in October of 2021, and it was very difficult for me. And he had been talking to me about, you're going to have to find somebody else, and I would say, that's hilarious. And that ain't happening. And I had gotten used to having a male voice in my head. And so there were a lot of women that I was accountable to. I have a very strong friend group in my life. And we're accountable with each other. People that I have been on the road to recovery with for 30 plus years, right? That I'm extremely grateful for. And so I began to believe that I could just talk to them. And I was going through some stuff. One of my granddaughters was pregnant. Her mother was in detox. She moved in with me. She was 16. I don't know if you've ever been around a pregnant 16-year-old or not, but I'd rather be in detox. I had this little granddaughter that I got in custody of, and she was 3, and I was in the middle of menopause, and there's this hormonal teenager, and I just kind of thought, like, I'll just, you know, I'm good. Fine. People would be like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. Thank God. Right here. And then one day, I went to the T-ball game because I signed a 3-year-old up for T-ball. And so we're playing T-ball because it's supposed to be cute. And it's not cute. And I'm going to walk down the bleachers to go watch her little at bat. And I misstepped on the bleachers and I fell. And I got my leg caught the wrong way in the bleachers, and I blew my knee out, and my head came down, knocked me unconscious, and ambulance comes, and it's a whole thing. And so now I'm on crutches. Hormonal, teenager, three-year-old, menopause, crutches. The three-year-old, she's almost four, she decided she wasn't going to wear shoes anymore. I've got places to go. I have a clock ticking in the morning. I need to get to work. I don't have time to talk to you about your shoes. Put on your shoes. She's three. She said, no, and sat down. We're done. We're effectively done. You know what I mean? Like, we are not, because what am I going to do? Get on the ground and put her shoes? I'm on crutch. I can't even bend this leg. You know what I mean? And so I'm standing there and I'm like, put on your shoes. You know? And she threw the shoes at me. Now, what happened is one of the shoes kind of flew past my head, but the other shoe landed right here on the bathroom counter. So you know what I did? Because I'm spiritual. I'm connected, you know. I picked it up and threw it back at her. This is, y'all, this is 4 years ago. I'm not talking about 6 months of sobriety. I'm 3 decades and some change sober, and I just threw a shoe at a kid, right? And then she said, did you just throw your shoe at me? And I said, no, I threw your shoe at you. And she said, go to your room. And I thought, that's a terrific idea. And so I just left her in the hall freaking out, and I went and put myself in my room, sat on the side of the bed, and I said, God, I think I might not be okay. And I was not, right? Because if you had asked me, and if I had been honest and transparent with the sponsor, what is happening was I was taking care of that teenager. I had provided her a safe place to come when she was in trouble. I got her mother into detox. I was raising this baby. I was working and providing for our family. Hear that? I could not see any of it. And as God would have it, right? When I got sober in Austin in 1987, there was a woman at my home group. Her name's Maggie. And Maggie had 11 years. And she was 28. And I remember thinking, nuh-uh. You know what I mean? Maggie's been sober ever since. Maggie, just January 26th, Maggie celebrated 48 years. But Maggie's literally known me since the day I walked in. And as luck would have it, I showed up at an area assembly. Because that's what we do. And Maggie was there, and she came over and she said, how are you doing? And I went, this my sponsor. She said, I can see that. You know what I mean? Because I need to be held accountable. My disease always, and look, if you had looked at my life, it looked like things were okay. You know what I mean? My alcoholism doesn't always show up in, like, I've got a can of gasoline and a box of matches. Sometimes, you know, that seems like a pretty good idea. Not at my house anymore, but some of y'all, you know. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up with untreated alcoholism. And so the book is very clear. I didn't put it on when I put this. I got cold earlier. I had to go change into a sweater. But I have this camel pin that I wear. And some of you who've been here for a while will know what that is. It used to be a thing, and I don't know why it's not anymore. But I love the camel. It brings me comfort, and it speaks to my soul. Because a camel can go 24 hours without a drink. And a camel wakes up on its knees. And it lays down at night on its knees. And it is able to carry heavy loads for long periods of time without getting thirsty. And I usually have that camel pin on. But that's one day. That camel can do that for one day, 24 hours. The next day, not so much, right? If you don't give the camel food and water, sustenance, for our purpose, right? The next day, your caravan is going to fall apart. You know what I mean? And so I get it for today, this 24-hour period of time, and that's how I think of it. I don't think about I'm going to be sober for the next 6 months, because I don't have the next 6 months. I don't know if I'll be home tomorrow. I pray God I will be, because I miss that baby. You know what I mean? But and Texas, honestly, and it's warmer there. And but but I don't have that. I don't have that guarantee. What I know is that I'm sober right now, and this is where God is, and this is where y'all are. So when I wake up in the morning, I read the black part. I don't reinvent it. I don't add to it. Because it's the only thing that I know to do that works. I pray the 10th step, page 84, page 85. I pray on awakening. And I feel better when I do that. I can feel the insanity. If I'm having a bad morning, I can feel it. But I got to tell y'all that, like, and I hear this all the time. People talk in meetings about, like, I have 30 minutes in the morning of quiet time. What is this quiet time that you people speak of? I know nothing of this quiet time that you people speak of, right? I have a 7-year-old who likes to dance. And she wakes up about 6:15. I don't like 6:15. I'm not friends with 6:15. And but she is. And so she wakes up. And so usually what happens is I wake up with Disney music or Peppa Pig or that phase is mostly over, thank God. But Pink, real loud in the house. And then she comes in this week. She came in, it rained. And she came in and she said, "Nona, open your eyes. That's not ever good. It's never, never, never good. I haven't talked to God yet, right? Nona, open your eyes." And I opened and she had a handful of snails. She said, "Look what I found." "Oh my goodness. Where did you find those?" "I went in the backyard and it rained and I collected them for you. And I'm going to put them right here. Don't you put those snails on my bed." Right? So the very first thing I'm saying is, don't. Right? Lizards. She loves lizards. She's woken me up with lizards. Like, this is the reality of my life. If I don't have a program of action that's practical, if I require 30 minutes of quiet time in order to connect with a power, in order for me to be useful in Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot stay. It does not, it's a grand idea. And some of us are so situated that it works like that. But some of us are living with children and husbands or disabled kids, or we're caring for our parents, or we have whatever, right? There's chaos. I need to be able to stay sober when there's chaos, right? And so a lot of mornings I'm up, I say, I do every morning, I say, "God, help me do no harm till I can get back to you," right? Because if I don't say that, she's not going to make it to the, me having coffee, right? Like, that's just the deal. I don't wake up happy. And so, "God, help me do no harm till I can get back to you," gets me to, "Here's your breakfast. I'm going to go brush my teeth." I go in to brush my teeth. I shut the door, right? Now I say, "Good morning. Going to need a little help here," right? And then I can start the 3rd step prayer, the 7th step prayer. I can pray the 10th step. I can pray the 11th step prayer. And when I get in the car after I take her to school, that blessed moment where she's out of the car in the morning. And I mean, I love her to death. I mean, as much as I love being with y'all, and I do love being with y'all, I love being with her, right? She's my pal. But there's that blessed moment where she's out of the car in the mornings. And then I pray for you. I pray for my sponsees and my friends. I have some people in my life who are going through such difficult, difficult things, big time, heavy duty, difficult things. And I pray until I get to work or until a sponsee calls because they figured out that's when I'm in the car in the morning. And, and it's and free time. And so, but I pray. And as I go through the day, that's what it says. We go through the day. We pause when agitated or doubtful. I don't know where we are on time. Do I have time to tell another quick story? I've been sober about 12 years, and I'd gotten back in the habit of slamming doors because I had kids in my house. You would think they were slamming. They're not slamming doors. I'm slamming doors, 12, maybe 14 years sober. And one day I lost my temper with my oldest child, the problem child, and I reached and got her bedroom door. And wham, I love to slam doors. I also loved the old phones because you could hang up the phone. It's really expensive to do that now. You know what I mean? It's like $1,500 worth of a fit if you do that with your cell phone. I love to slam down the phone, and I love to slam the door. I don't know why. So this child of mine called my sponsor and turned me in. And so I get to the new meeting the next day, and Pop said, "How's things going at your house?" And I said, "Good, good." He said, "Really?" And you know how you know, but you don't know yet, right? So I've got that Rolodex of stuff, like who could have called and what would they have said? And I said, "Oh, who'd you talk to?" And he said, "Grace called me and told me you're slamming doors." And I was like, "Look, if you live with her, you know what I mean?" And he said, "But I don't, right?" And he said, "You do, and you're not going to slam any more doors. Stop it." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Stop slamming doors or you're fired." And I was like, "You can't fire me for slamming doors. Fire you for any reason I want to. I'll have to sponsor you. I'm sick of you." I didn't want, now, and this is my point, I didn't want to stop slamming doors. But more than that, I trusted him with my life. And I could not afford to lose that relationship. And so I said the maybe one of the few most honest things I'd ever said to him. And I said, "I don't know how." I said, "I think about it after I slam the door. I don't think about it before." He said, "I'm tired of you calling and turning yourself in." He said, you're comfortable asking for forgiveness and not permission. And we don't live like that." I'm like, "Well, I do. But perhaps that's not okay. You know, who knew?" So I said, "I don't know what to do. I don't know how to stop slamming doors." And that was the truth. I didn't. And he said, "Are you asking God for the power to pause?" And I said, "No. Why would I do that?" And he said, "In the book, it says we pause when agitated or doubtful." And we began to investigate that idea for me. And the truth is, I'm never agitated. I'm calm or homicidal. Agitated was an unfamiliar emotion for me, right? And the second thing is doubtful. Who's doubtful? I'm not doubtful. I'm right, right? So we had to kind of work through those definitions and how those might be applying to my life. And I said, "It doesn't say to ask God for the power to pause." And he said, "Most people aren't as sick as you. You are going to need to ask God." And I'll tell you, this is a true story. Every morning from that next morning, that was at a noon meeting. And when I went to bed that night, I said my prayers. And when I got up the next morning, I remembered to ask. And when I went to bed that night, I said, "God, please help me to remember to ask you in the morning for the power to pause, because you and I both know I'm not going to remember." And the next morning, I woke up and I remembered. And I said, "God, please give me the power to pause today when I'm agitated or doubtful or irritated or angry and seek you first." And I've been saying that prayer every morning, and I don't slam doors, right? Sometimes I throw a shoe, right? But that prayer has given me the ability to pause and seek instead of taking credit for, because I'll take credit. And once I start taking credit, right, I don't need you. I got this. And my disease will never remind me that I'm wrong. I have to be with you for you to say, "Mighty full of yourself today, aren't you?" You know what I mean? And I got friends around me that love to say that kind of stuff to me. Like, I'll tell them, "Hey, I'm going to Kentucky." And they're like, "Be sure and tell them we're not impressed with you." And I'm like, "Okay, sure and tell them my friends are unimpressed with my sobriety." You know, my sponsor would say, "Don't break your arm patting yourself on the back for something you should have been doing all along." Right? And would remind me that these are not my laurels. That all the things, that there's a woman that's been created in Alcoholics Anonymous that God would give a baby to, right, to raise this grandchild, that's not my laurel. That's 1,000% Alcoholics Anonymous. When I stay in that place, right, I stay safe and protected. I stay, like Brooke said, in that place of neutrality. I don't have to swear off. I don't have to worry about it, right? I just have to be here with you guys in this moment, and it's good. Thanks, everybody.